Welcome to the Sport Talk Begin. I'm John Wilkerson. Jimmy Hyams back with us today after he got a bit of a break, just as John McClain, who joins us now on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, was able to get a few moments of, we'll just say, rest and relaxation, hopefully last week. But good to have him back with us. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July to you. We know and we've heard stories, but tell us, how are things going in your neck of the woods? How are things going in Texas and Houston?
Well, we set records every day for positive tests for COVID-19, and our governor, who refused to do what he should have done, medical experts told him weeks ago, and he opened it up too quick. And problem when you open it up is people act like the virus is gone, and so people didn't do what they were told, wearing face masks and social distancing, and we're paying a price for it, just like Florida, where I was last week. So our governor yesterday finally mandated a mask. If you don't, first, when you're in public places, if you first time you get a warning, second time you get a $250 fine, and I'll say it's about time.
John, you put together a piece that, as we get closer to the season, expectations, of course, are formed all the time, but in regards to the DeAndre Hopkins trade, what do you think are the appropriate expectations for the Texans with either the players and or draft picks that were used when they made the swap with Arizona?
They made that trade for Hopkins in March, and they got running back David Johnson, and they used a second-round pick on defensive tackle Ross Blacklock, which was their biggest need, of a defensive lineman who could penetrate from the middle. And then they, as part of that trade I used in my column, was if they had not acquired that second round pick from Arizona, they wouldn't have been able to trade their second round pick because they would have had to use it on an interior defensive lineman. So it gave them the luxury of trading theirs. They traded it to the Rams for receiver Brandon Cooks. And so the way I look at it is they got Cooks, David Johnson, and Ross Blacklock for an all-pro receiver. And, of course, it's still an unhappy trade. We'll have to see how the season plays out to find out how it works out for both teams. One of the things the Texans can do, David Johnson is a great receiver. He's proved it ever since he came into the NFL. He got benched last year in Cliff Kingsbury's first season. He missed three games because of an injury, but 2 years ago, he played every game, and he had almost 1,400 yards rushing and receiving and scored 10 touchdowns. And so I asked people on my show here, would you take that from him this season, knowing he's going to rotate with Duke Johnson, as Carlos Hyde had done, take almost 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns? And, of course, everybody says yes. But he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to produce. Brandon Cooks has got to stay healthy. The Texans have the possibilities of having a lot of offensive weapons, but almost all of them have had recent injury issues, so it would be improbable to think all of them would be able to stay on the field.
John, New England signing Cam Newton, I thought it was interesting the numbers involved. So it's $7.5 million with incentives. His base is $1.05 million. $555,000 guaranteed. Are you surprised at those numbers?
I'm not, because he had no other offers and because he's coming off three major operations. When you're coming off three major surgeries, two on your shoulders and one on your foot, you're going to have to take a lot of incentives, and I don't care who you are, what position you play. So he's got a chance, if he plays well this season, to re-sign with the Patriots, and they'll have the option to franchise him if they can't reach an agreement. Or, of course, if they're not interested in bringing him back, he can sign somewhere else. I thought it was a really smart move for Newton, smart move for Belichick. The problem is Newton has the same problem Tom Brady had last year. They don't have a lot of weapons on offense.
No, they don't. The Washington Redskins, all indications are they will change their name. I want to get your reaction to that, but before I do, I know a lot of people say, well, it's about time. One of the things that has happened, according to what I read, were the Native Americans did not object to the nickname, which is one reason I think it stayed as long as it did. But your thoughts on the Redskins heading in the direction of changing their name?
Well, I'll say this, Jenny. Most Native Americans object to it and claim that it's racist. There was a group, when this was a controversy a couple of years ago, that Dan Snyder, the owner, found and quoted them and used what they said. But the fact is, most Native Americans think it's racist. And a lot of big, you know, to change something like that, if he's going to do it because it's the right thing to do, he would already done it. But, of course, money figures into it. His partner, his primary partner, Fred Smith, had founded FedEx, and it's FedEx Field. He says they need to change it. And it wouldn't surprise me if Snyder doesn't somehow parlay this, because he needs a new stadium. He's let his stadium, which I think is about 20 years old, be in disrepair. It is a dump and a half. I was there two seasons ago. He's just let it deteriorate because he wants to get out of Landover and move back into the district, preferably where RFK Stadium is, and he wants public money. So I'm guessing he's going to have somebody lobbying the government to see if they can get public money to go back downtown, build a new stadium, and they'll do like the Wizards. They'll come up with a different nickname. Now, a lot of Redskins fans, of which my wife is one, she grew up in Washington, D.C., loving George Allen, Sonny Jurgensen, Billy Kilmer, Joe Gibbs, Joe Theismann, and all them. She is adamantly opposed to it, and she wears her Redskins memorabilia proudly. And no matter how much grief I give her about it, it's not going to change her mind. And like a lot of Redskins fans, she's unhappy that they're going to change the name. But it's inevitable, and there's nothing they're going to be able to do about it. It's just a matter of when and what it will be.
John, when it comes to a new name for Washington, we've seen other franchises make changes, relocate, and lo and behold, they wind up with names that were already owned by NFL properties. How involved would the league be in this decision by Daniel Snyder and his team?
One of the things about the Titans, when they were the Oilers and they moved, and remember, they were the Oilers for two seasons before they became the Titans, and I would imagine some of that memorabilia would be a collector's item, and just like Houston Oilers stuff here is a collector's item. So they were going to be the pioneers, and then it leaked out, and I think it leaked out in the Memphis commercial appeal, and Bud Adams quickly and quietly changed it to Titans. So I saw a thing today, I think Gil Brandt tweeted this, that there have been four franchises that changed their name while they were in the same city, going back to the Decatur Staleys, who became the Bears. And so Washington will be the fifth. And I'm guessing it'll have something to do with politics or something that we think of when we think of Washington, D.C.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We'll get a break. We've got more with John coming up. Again, the program today is here in Maynardville. We're at Food City. It's the Big Ticket 2020 presented by Food City. Come by. We are set up just outside the door. It would be the right entrance. If you're facing the front of the supermarket, it's the right side. And you can come by, see what word that you should text to 68683. You must text it in before 7 o'clock to be in today's registration. And there'll be two finalists from those that register this afternoon. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. More with John McClain coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
We'll be right back.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Our guest joining us on the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline is John McClain of the Houston Chronicle.
John, the New England Patriots fined $1.1 million in a third-round draft pick over the film crew breaking NFL rules last year. Was that about the penalty you thought they would get?
Jimmy, it's been so long since that investigation started, I've forgotten about it. They announced they signed Cam Newton at the same time, right before the league announced that penalty. So they wanted to one-up the league. Every time they've been in trouble, the league has told them, if there's another violation, we will come down harder on you. And that's the same thing they did on Deflategate after Spygate. Now they've done this one. They claim that it was an accident. There's nothing that the Patriots do that's an accident. And nobody bought it, and it was pretty stupid of them to do it. And so they lose the three. Bill Belichick always has extra picks, so that's not going to hurt them. And, of course, that kind of money, tip money to Bob Kraft.
Also, with the NFL, they've indicated that they are looking at fining players for, quote, reckless behavior, close quote. That includes going to restaurants or sharing rides. How enforceable is that going to be?
Number one, how would you know if somebody took an Uber? Now, they're not supposed to do that. They got a lot of guidelines because of the coronavirus. And if they think that young players are going to abide by the rules, they don't abide by a lot of rules as it is. So I think you're going to see a lot of violations, but I don't see how it's enforceable. Are they going to be on the honor system? Oops, I took two Ubers the other night when I drank too much. And people, can you imagine the outcry? You're going to fine that player for taking an Uber instead of driving himself. So I don't think that'll ever happen.
John, we have heard more and more. First, it was, I believe, maybe Seattle and the Ravens. But what do you think in terms of Deshaun Watson saying that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Antonio Brown wound up in Houston? Any chance that happens?
Absolutely not. I don't know why anybody would be dumb enough to let a snake in your house that you know is going to bite you. If Mike Tomlin didn't want him and John Gruden didn't want him and Bill Belichick didn't want him, why in the world would people think the Texans wanted him? One thing Bill O'Brien says, every time he talks about a player on the team he likes, he says, good teammate, over and over and over. Who is the epitome of a bad teammate? Antonio Brown.
When you look at the soap opera that continues to be Jamal Adams and his saga, any chance that the Texans would be a team that if he were to be moved, that he could land in Houston?
I don't think that he will be traded by the Jets. He's got 2 years left on his contract. He can complain all he wants about being underpaid. If he doesn't show up for training camp, he doesn't get credit toward a season is being vested. He would still owe them 2 seasons. Also, he would accumulate $40,000 a day fines, and he has to pay them. The team can't forgive him. And when you're making less than $1 million, that's $40,000 a day. Fines tend to add up. So I think they'll get him back. I think they'll sign him to a new deal at some point. But if indeed they made him available, Bill O'Brien, I'm sure, would check him out because they need a second safety. And if they had Jamal Adams and Justin Reed, they'd have the best twosome in the NFL. And he has said he will play under this year's contract, not try to get an extension. That's what they would have to have because they couldn't afford to give him anything any more this year. But they don't have first and second round picks. That goes to Miami for Laramie Tunsil trade. And I can't imagine if the Jets trade him, they would wait till 2022 to get a return on that investment.
John Maurice Smith, the head of the NFLPA, said that player workouts go against safety goals and protecting players before camp. I can't imagine, though, that there's been any change in the player behavior since Smith said that. Have you seen any indication that players have ceased with some of these workouts after Smith's words?
I don't know because there was a lot of things going on we just don't know about. Don't know if some stopped or not. You know, we see Tom Brady thumbing his nose at the rules. I think it'd be very interesting if Brady or some of those guys that worked out with him and went against what the league and the NFLPA recommended test positive when they report for camp. And it's going to be a lot of players testing positive. Damian Lillard of the Trailblazers, I saw a story with him yesterday saying there's going to be a lot of guys break our rules.
Yep.
And I just don't understand it, but it's human nature. I'm thinking when I'm that year, when I was that young, if I'd had millions of dollars, you know, I knew I wasn't supposed to smoke. Everybody told me I wasn't supposed to smoke. I smoked until I was 33, knowing that I could get lung cancer and all the other things it did. And so I think there'll be a lot of players who flaunt the rules.
Also, in regard to NFL camps, do you think that there will be fewer than 90 players? I've read some concern about how many players they would bring together to camps. What do you see that number being?
They usually have 90, then they cut down to 75, then they cut down to 53, and last year it was just one big cut. Bringing in 10 less players, does that mean you got a less chance of getting COVID-19, or does it mean that you think it's more manageable? It's not manageable in any way, shape, or form when you're going to try to do what you're supposed to do off the field, and you let guys go out there and play and bleed on each other and sweat on each other all the time. So it's very hypocritical, contradictory. But the bottom line is everybody wants to play. The players want to get paid, and they know there's a good chance they could get it, and then they say, hey, I'll get over it. Most players do. Most people do. Not everybody dies, and a lot of them that do are older or have pre-existing conditions, which a lot of players do. They have people at home with those conditions. And I would imagine if a player is reluctant to come back because, say, he has a child with asthma or something, and then the child tests positive, he's going to blame himself for going to play football, even though it might not have anything to do with it, because you never know where it's coming from. So I think it's just going to be unbelievable to watch. It's going to be amazing how many players test positive, and hopefully all of them will be out a minimum of 2 weeks. They got to pass two tests in a row before they can come back. And there's a lot of athletes we don't know about who've already tested positive and are back.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, we kicked this around a little bit last week, and that is once you get past Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Deshaun Watson, it's a very interesting conversation as to talk about who are the next best quarterbacks in the AFC. Who would be a couple of names that you would throw out there?
Oh, gosh, John, let's see. If he's healthy, Ben Roethlisberger, obviously. I'm going over the divisions. Most teams have young quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers coming off a bad season. I don't know where you would put him today. Derek Carr wasn't as bad as a lot of people thought he was last year. If you just look at his statistics and if he showed any improvement with John Gruden, he would be in probably the third tier of quarterbacks. Let's see, in the division that I'm in, Ryan Tannehill, if he could pick up where he left off last year, he would definitely be in that second group, but there's a big if about that. So there's some good young ones like Sam Darnold and Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, guys that have flashed since they came into the league. So there's not a shortage, and Cam Newton, if he's healthy, and if some weapons develop in New England, Cam Newton's not young, but he would have to be put in that group.
And you were talking about it earlier that one of the challenges for either Cam Newton or Jared Stidham would be for what was very unattractive for Tom Brady to hang out for more time in Foxborough, and that is just not amazing weapons to work with on the offensive side of the football. What are the chances that Cam Newton can get back to anywhere close to his MVP style of play? Do you think that's long gone?
He doesn't have a Steve Smith. He doesn't have a Greg Olsen. He's got a good running game with Sonny Michel, but he doesn't have a tight end. What they need is Julian Edelman to stay healthy in the slot. Last year's number one pick, N'Keal Harry, he was hurt a lot as a rookie, to develop big time in his second season. That would help. And the offensive line is pretty good. It's better than Brady's offensive line in Tampa is okay, but it was good in New England. But Brady's receivers with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Gronk, I mean, he's got as much talent at the receiver as any quarterback in the NFL, probably more than any of them.
John, we have seen a number of NBA players opt out of the restart. We got Mike Trout saying that he's uncomfortable playing, didn't say he would or wouldn't, said he was uncomfortable. There have been some players that have indicated they may not play in Major League Baseball. Do you think there'll be many in the NFL? Do you think there'll be a larger percentage or a smaller percentage of NFL players saying no compared to the NBA and Major League Baseball?
Well, there's a lot more players in the NFL than there are in baseball and basketball, so I would say it would be more players, but a smaller percentage. Also, in baseball, if you say, I'm not going to play, you still get paid and you get credit toward a year of service. That's because you got a great union. Now, football hadn't necessarily said that, and if they don't, it's going to make them look terrible. But most guys play because they love the game. But I saw a thing the other day where most offensive linemen are considered obese based on the criteria they have. Some of the things, like if you're diabetic, there's a lot of guys that are type 2 diabetics. There's guys who have sleep apnea. That's another condition they're worried about. So there's a lot of things in each of those sports that players have that would keep them out if they wanted to be out. But I think it's rare that a player would just say, I'm not going to play. Ryan Zimmerman of the Nationals, his father's a surgeon, his father's a doctor and his mother is an emergency room nurse, and he's about to have his fifth child, so he's opted out of the season, and I think there'll be more.
John, what are you working on this week?
I turned in a column for Sunday, John, based on the top storylines the Texans have had, top five storylines of the offseason that will affect their regular season. I've got podcasts on our Texas Sports Nation website, a column I did yesterday. Don't overlook their tight ends with all this speed and talent, is wide receiver and running backs who can catch the ball. And I appreciate you guys moving me. I hope you have a great fourth and stay safe.
You stay safe as well. John, thank you very much. That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. You too. Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.